Welcome to the RepChat Inside Stories series, conversations with creative talent and creative entrepreneurial businesses. We discover the inside stories that inspire and motivate creative people to do what they do. Hello, this is Kathy Dixon from RepCap Creations. In this Inside Story podcast, I am talking with the wonderfully talented Almug Payel about her brilliant one-woman show, Love Goddess, the Rita Hayworth Cabaret. Listen to an excerpt from her show.
Dancing, always dancing, a man and me, and a beautiful woman whose name starts with G.
They said you were my one true love. After myself, they sold you short, my dear.
I remember laughter and music and afternoon tea. But what was that music and was that girl me? Now I don't recall, can't remember at all.
I knew from the start I wasn't just making a star, I was making a mint.
I remember summers and parties and the sound of the train and the smell of the streets right after the rain. Now where was that party and when was that train?
Arms up. Ribs in, butt tucked. Head tilt, beautiful.
I don't recall. Was it summer or fall?
Ladies and gentlemen, put the blame on Mame. And please welcome the legendary Rita Hayworth.
Lovely to have you here.
Yes, thank
so
you.
So can you just tell us a little bit about you?
I was born and raised in Israel, and that's where I went to school for theater studies and for acting at Tel Aviv University. I got my BA in theater arts, and shortly after my graduation, I worked as an actor a little bit in Israel, TV and film and voiceover and theater. But shortly after my graduation, I moved to Malta, where I lived for a couple of years. Again, I worked as an actor. This is where the show was originated. After a couple of years in Malta, I actually immigrated again to New York, which was my original plan. Malta was just like something that happened to me on the way. I've been living in New York ever since. In New York, I had the opportunity to evolve a lot, and I also had the opportunity to take the show from Malta to New York and to produce it there and collaborate with amazing artists and grow as an artist myself. I started writing the show when I lived in Malta, actually. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. It was pretty unexpected. I was commissioned to write a play for a festival in Malta. It's called the White Night Festival. It happens every year. Really nice. It's like a whole night of performance art and music, like all over the city, the capital city, Valletta. And I was asked if I could write a show that will somewhat correspond with this other show that was already going on. About there was an Italian actor who has a one-man show about Orson Welles.
Mm.
And then I had a conversation with the artistic director, and we thought it would be interesting to come up with maybe a one-woman show about Rita Hayworth, because they were together, and it would be kind of like an interesting conceptual link, you know, in the festival. And so I was, you know, I didn't know a lot about Rita Hayworth, just like most people.
Mm-hmm.
She was this, like, larger-than-life 1940s, like, icon. Mostly, you know, a poster, a pinup.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, okay, let me see what I can do. Let me see if I can, you know, come up with a real connection to her, to her story, to her life. Because if I had to write a play about her, it has to come from a very independent plays. This was also the first time I was ever commissioned to write a play. It wasn't like my initiative. And so that's when I, you know, I went back home and I did my homework and research, and that's when I came across some books that I read about her. One of them was the book that you also read. And every bits and pieces of information that I could gather, like her films and articles and interviews with other people that were involved, husbands or ex-husbands that talked about her, and just every bit of information I could gather so I could map her life. What's interesting for me to write about her?
When I was watching her, I read that autobiography, I noticed that you did capture two voices of Rita. There was Rita, the very shy woman, who was Rita, and then there was her as the star performer. Tell us a little bit about that process of how you captured those two voices.
I think that's what really struck me the most about her, this dichotomy between, you know, her persona on film, which is what everybody knows and associate her with, and her real self, which was the opposite from everything that I read about her and from her own quotes. One of the most famous quotes that associated with her is, "Every man that would go to bed with Gilda," which is her most famous character that she portrayed in the movie named Gilda, after that character. "So every man who went to bed with Gilda was surprised to wake up with me the next morning." And that's quite a strong statement. And I think it really embodies, you know, this dichotomy that I'm talking about. This, like, sort of perhaps disappointment that she must have felt with men, like thinking that they are taking the bed, this seductive femme fatale, you know, that they see on the screen, and then waking up with this real person with real insecurities. And that's actually not as, you know, like bigger than life that you see on the screen, and has real problems and issues and concerns, and just want to be loved for who she is, and, you know, just needs this assurance. And then finding out that most of those men were like more in love with the idea of her, not the real her.
I love the song that you did where you stepped out into the audience, and it was about the five marriages.
Yeah. This was a very interesting idea that just came up like that. Like, how to, first of all, the show started as a one-person show. And also the version we did here is still a one-woman cabaret. And the idea was, you know, how to bring the audience in as much as, how to incorporate the audience in a way that is, you know, not too invasive, but is meaningful. And also how to use the audience somewhat as a partner, as an actor in the show. One-person shows are tricky like that. You always have to find your interaction, your other, your partner.
Well, I was sitting in the audience, I noticed you did really connect with the audience in that song in particular as you came out.
Yes.
And you chose your husbands from the audience. But I think there was a constant connection to us as you were doing the show.
Yeah, it's a build-up, and then it kind of explodes in that husband moment where I don't think that, you know, unless you know what to expect in the show because someone told you, it's all of a sudden, like, you become one of the husbands.
Yeah. There was this autobiographical element, and you were accompanied on the piano. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the collaboration with the pianist.
Sure, yeah. The pianist just happened to be the composer and the lyricist of the show, Logan Madeline. I was very, very lucky to, I was introduced to him by the director of my show back in New York. His name is Jay Stern. Logan and I were, after a lot of conversations about Rita and the research that Logan has done himself, basically Logan took my script written as a monologue in the first place with a little bit of music, but it was not a musical per se. And he transformed a lot of these pieces of monologues into songs and continued this storytelling through lyrics, through his songs. He's done it quite brilliantly. He's also playing the piano in the show, and he's a bit of an actor himself in it because he has interjections here and there, playing different characters, like mostly the men in her life. And since then, collaboration was very fruitful.
Yeah, fantastic. It was really, really effective.
Let's listen to an excerpt from your show, The Love Goddess, in which you're reminiscing about your very early memories as a dancer, and you were called Carmen in those days, and you're accompanied by Logan Medland on piano.
But I'm truly not here to brag. I am here tonight to tell my story, to sing my story. And this is my radio play debut. You know, I still enjoy walking into a bar, any bar on a New York summer night, and hearing my name served ice cold in a wide cocktail glass. Margarita. Straight up or on the rocks, salt rim or sugar, and no mystery type of recipe. Margarita Carmen Dolores Cancino. A simple, timid 4-year-old girl with a name just as long as my family legacy of professional flamenco dance. I learned to dance before I learned to walk, before I learned to choose.
Hey, Carmen.
'Cause Daddy used to call me Carmen.
Carmen, come on here, sweetie. Come to Daddy. You know it's time.
It's time for what, Daddy? It's time for what?
To start the show, sweetie. To start the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Eduardo Cancino, the famous Spanish dancer, my father. I learned to dance from my father. Well, he was firm and he was strong.
Knees bent.
I learned a tango, the foxtrot, the waltz, and I learned when I did it wrong.
Terrible.
When I am dancing for my father, we work all day and half the night.
You can eat when we're done.
And though the weeks and months were long, we didn't stop till it was right. Thank you, Father. Yes, I love my birthday cake. I counted exactly 12 candles and one for next year. Yes, I do feel like a little woman now. What? Mama's dancing shoes for me? Oh, thank you so much, Father. I would be honored to become your partner in the dancing casinos. Oh, we go to Mexico tomorrow night?
Well, apparently Mexico was the only place I could legally work at my age. Wearing my mom's heels, I was ready to bring some money home.
Were there any particular challenges making this story for you?
When I researched Rita's life, there were so many things, there were so many interesting highlights for me that I wanted to focus on. I think the first thing that drew my attention and got me really committed to it was her Alzheimer's story, the way most people are not even aware that Rita Hayworth suffered from what you call early onset Alzheimer's because she got it, she was in her 40s. She's quite young, and usually when you get it at like an earlier age, it progresses very slowly, so it's like a slow deterioration. At that time, there was no awareness of the disease, and so she was basically ridiculed a lot by the media, by the press, and she was portrayed as a drunk, as an alcoholic, as a crazy person, mistreated a long time by the press. And it's really such a sad way to end up such a glamorous career and being treated in that way, so disrespected. And I thought, God, this is something that I would like to focus on, because at that time, well, my grandfather was suffering from Alzheimer's, but he was also a public figure in Israel. But to me, I could see the parallels. Kind of interesting, like, why would I see parallels between Rita Hayworth and my grandfather? But I could. For me, Alzheimer's is like one of the most devastating diseases out there. We'll talk about cancer and other like terrible diseases. Alzheimer's is something that is mostly affecting, you know, the family and the surroundings of the person who is suffering. Yeah, so I had my personal connection. I had my personal experience and my family. And so that was, for me, the first point of connection. And but then I was like, I want to write a show about Rita having Alzheimer's. I don't think that is what I want to highlight in her life, because that's the bitter end of it. But she deserves to be highlighted for all the other amazing qualities about her made her who she was.
Yeah, and you did show her love of dancing, and you sang of her... was it two films she made with Fred Astaire?
She made two films with him, yes, yes. And she also performed Gene Kelly. She worked with basically both of the, you know, probably the top legends of...
And she was an extraordinary dancer.
She was an extraordinary dancer, and that's what made her famous in the first place. But she also happened to be extremely pretty and really good for the camera at that time. So she was transformed into an actor and basically utilized her dancing skills to become this like triple threat actress that she was. All those actors back in those days, they really had to know how to dance, to know how to act, to look beautiful on the screen. But they had to embody all of that. You couldn't fake it in those days. So she was, and yeah, so I guess the challenge for me was like how to create this beautiful arc of her life story, highlighting those moments and highlighting those challenges in her life without dragging it down and making it like a deep, dark drama. There are dark parts to the show because there were dark parts in her life and not shying away from that, but I wanted to keep it entertaining at the same time. And I think the challenge was like, how do you
keep the balance?
How do you keep that?
Tell the story and to make it entertaining and inclusive. And
exactly.
All of that.
And the same challenge was for Logan too. Like, how does he create that balance musically? Right. So, yeah, those were some challenges.
So you've played to Maltese audiences, New York audiences, London audiences.
Yes.
How have different audiences responded to your show?
You know, surprisingly, there was this like something that was in common to everyone in the show. Everyone would come to me, like audience members would come to me after the show and be like, I had no idea that Rita had Alzheimer's. I had no idea that love life was so complicated. She was married and divorced for 5 times. I had no idea she was married to Orson Welles or to Prince Ali Khan, the son of the other Khan, that they had a daughter together. No idea that she danced with Fred Astaire. I had no idea that she was actually, she looked quite Spanish before she was made this All-American for the screen, because she had to go through a lot of physical transformation to fit to that category, because for years she was playing that ethnical characters, ethnic characters. We have a song dedicated just to that. She wanted to step up, or not quite sure how much she was the leader of that, you know, career step up. It was more about the men in her life, her husband, who was also her agent, who just wanted her to become bigger so that, you know.
Yeah. And also from her father, and also Harry Cohen. He was also a huge influence on her, wasn't he?
Harry Cohen, who was the head of Columbia Pictures at that time. At that time, actors would sign with an exclusive contract with studios, so they would have to only exclusively work for that particular studio. So they were basically owned by the studio. In the show, I call it the lifetime contract, because in a way, it kind of was. She was not free to always do what she wants. So if she wanted to produce her own movie, if she wanted to participate in an independent production of some sort, she always had to like be permitted to do so. And if they wanted her for a movie to make the big buck, then there was nothing she could do about that. She had to obey. And so, yeah, she had a long-term relationship with the head of the studios at that time, Harry Cohen. And he made her a big star, but he also felt ownership over that.
And how much did you identify yourself?
Well, me and Rita, we have quite different paths. Yeah. Right? So you could say like, oh, how, what are the parallels here? So the first parallel, as I mentioned, was the Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And that, not because it happened to me personally, of course, but it happened in my family. And so I felt like I want to step into that. You know, I want to explore that through her character. I think that I could also relate to her in terms of love life. Mm-hmm. You know, all those different men in your life, they want, you know, they know you're an actor and they think it's all this like glamorous thing and the idea of it more than the actual you. And then, you know, the insecurities that come with that. And so that was something I could absolutely relate to
absolutely.
As well. Yes.
What's the future for the show? What's the future for the Love Goddess?
This show was originated in Malta about 10 years ago, I want to say. It's already been quite a long journey. Then it went to New York. Then it was produced in New York as a play. And then later on transformed into a cabaret and then performed as a cabaret in New York. Then was taken, partnered up with a producer, Laura Lundy. And she brought it here to London back in 2017. It was still a cabaret. Then back in New York, after the first round in London, we partnered up with another extremely talented playwright, Stephen Garvey, to develop the show, One Woman Cabaret, to a fully staged production.
Oh,
all those characters would come to life as actors. So we're talking like 6 to 7 people in the cast. We actually developed it already into a full play, full musical. We had a chance to do a stage reading in New York in front of an audience of like industry producers and so on. And then the pandemic happened. You know, you probably heard that line many times. We did this and this and that.
Yeah.
And then the pandemic. And then put on Like, it was all stopped. And then we had to, like, recalculate. First of all, there was nothing we could do at first. There were big musicals out there that just opened on Broadway and had to close and lost a lot of money. So it was definitely not the time to pursue that. There was just no theaters for a couple of years. Then we decided to record the show, at least have, like, an audio version of it in the studio, which, you know, hopefully we could hear some parts of it.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Then the idea was to... So first of all, this plan is still a plan now that everything...
The full musical.
The full musical is still our ultimate goal. And now that theaters finally started to open in New York, on Broadway, we're definitely still, you know, climbing on that ladder. We are also considering a West End engagement or, you know, whatever that means. We are here because we want to explore this relationship, you know, between New York and London and, you know, see where it makes more sense to have our grand opening. But for now, since theaters just started to open up and we wanted to travel with the show so that, again, scale it back to the one-woman show version. And in order to bring it here for this round where you got to meet us and see the show, we took some elements from the already fully developed play and sort of, like, implemented it in the original one-woman show. So the one-woman show now is sort of like a hybrid. It's still a one-woman show with a, of course, pianist who is like, you know, sort of like playing some roles here and there, but it's still a one-woman show per se. And yeah, so right now it's scaled back into that version, but the idea is again to go back to fully developed musical. So this is just a step on the way. But we're flexible that way because we have the one-person version and we have the fully developed version, and we can go either way.
Fantastic.
So we're kind of happy about that.
Yeah, so very, very, very flexible.
Yes.
So I have another question for you about Rita. Would you imagine that Rita Hayworth, or her spirit, walks into your show? What do you think she'd make of your presentation?
You know, I probably would be really nervous if I knew that she's in. I'm like, oh my God, I hope that I'm doing you justice.
Yeah.
Because this is what I really hope. Of course, I am me. At the end of the day, I mean, I am portraying Rita's character, but it is my interpretation, and it's through my eyes, and it's through my experience, it's through my, you know, connection.
Yeah.
And so I just hope that if she was, you know, able to sit there in the audience, and maybe she is, who knows, or her daughter, because her daughter is still alive, I would hope that she would feel that maybe her voice is being heard. Maybe I'm doing her justice. Maybe she'll be able to even crack a laugh out of it and be like, oh my God, my life was hilarious. Not as dramatic as I had thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. I truly hope that she would feel like happy to be represented in that way.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm sure she would. So just wrapping up, is there anything else that would like our listeners to know about the show itself?
Well, first of all, if listeners would like to still come see us,
yeah.
We are still on. We're still in London. We have one more weekend at Canal Cafe Theatre, which is in Little Venice, Notting Hill. We're running this coming weekend. That's, I believe, October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday, Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 7 p.m. So I would like the listeners, if you know, this is something they find interesting, to come see us. This is their last opportunity for this round.
Yes. And where can they find you on the internet?
On the internet, they can find us, first of all, on social media. You can follow our Instagram account, which is Love Goddess the Musical.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, same name, Love Goddess the Musical, is on Facebook. We have a Facebook page. And also, it's very easy to get the information about the show through Canal Cafe Theater website. That's Canal Cafe Theater. Google it and immediately you will see the details about Love Goddess, the Rita Hayworth Cabaret.
Thank you so much for meeting me.
Well, thank
you. It was quite on short notice. It's been absolutely fun. It's a fantastic show.
Thanks so much.
I loved what you did. You brought the memories of Rita Hayworth to life and performed it beautifully. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Reb Chat Inside Stories series. We hope you enjoyed it. To feature your inside story, contact us at rebcatcreations.com or follow us on Instagram @rebcatcreations.